From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Hello, this is Danhausen here, very nice for evil, and you are listening to Bob After Dark. Subscribe or be cursed.
Oh, hey there, children of the night, and welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says hello everything that goes bump in the night. I'm your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, is the ever wonderful, ever vampiric, ever cape wearing, and forever the heartthrob of Bob After Dark, my friend, my brother, my producer, Count Panic himself. Oh, hey there, Count Panic.
Oh, hey, Bob. Yes, back here once again live, or not live, depending on when you're hearing this, for another episode of Bob After Dark. Bone chilling, might I add.
It's been a few weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just the way the cookie crumbles, but we're back.
A lot and, going on here, Bob.
Yeah, you know.
A lot of plates in the air.
Yes, and I just wanted to say hello to all of our fans that are going to be joining us from that we got to meet over Gen Con weekend.
Well, Gen Con.
That I got to meet over the weekend at Gen Con.
No,
you weren't there.
Gen Con is a big con.
It's a massive 85,000 people convention.
Wow.
All about tabletop board gaming, but there's also a nerdy culture undertone to it outside of gaming.
Yeah.
But I was selected to be able to host two seminars over the weekend, and one of which was a nice, big, nearly sold-out room. So I just wanted to say thank you to everybody who came out to that, and that is now listening to this episode.
Yeah, the Gen Con folks, welcome aboard. And I saw some highlights there, Bob, you posting. You had nice little new badges?
The badge ribbons. Yeah, they call them badge hangers or badge ribbons. They're little trinkets you get for your badges. Gosh, and nice. I ordered a limited 100 of them.
Wow.
And I gave all out but 97.
Because you wanted to save a few.
I have 3 left, one of which is mine.
We're going to raffle them off.
One of which is mine.
Oh, okay.
One of which is going to be an extra in case I lose mine. And then one we're giving away tonight on the show.
Whoa. Wait.
Yeah. So tonight.
How's this going to work?
So tonight I have every person that's. Because last week posted that we were doing this giveaway, which is a Bob After Dark swag-like experience. Mm-hmm. Experience swag bag, swag experience. Yeah. No, I'm giving away a sticker, the regular logo button, the B logo button, and of course the limited edition Gen Con badge ribbon. So we're going to be giving out those tonight. You still have time to enter. You have to go to the Facebook page.
Okay. So how does this work? There's rules.
So here. On July 28th, I posted a post saying just in time for Gen Con, we got a freshly supply of swag, including our first run of B logo buttons. We want to give away a swag supply, including the limited edition Gen Con ribbons that you can only get by attending the show. How to enter, comment your supposed favorite haunted location in the comment section, and join the Bob After Dark Discord. The winner must be a member of the Discord in order to win.
So that's how it's going, okay.
Yeah, and so there's a link there. If you're listening to this live, you still have a chance to enter. Go over to that post on the Bob After Dark Facebook page, and we'll have a winner announced later tonight.
Okay. So do we have entries? I mean,
we have dozens of entries.
Okay, so a winner will be proclaimed.
So there will be a winner proclaimed this evening, yes,
wow.
before the show.
This is a big deal.
Yep. So that's pretty exciting stuff.
But we got to wait to the end of the show.
Yep. Okay. So, Panic. Yeah. Count Panic. Mm-hmm. It's been a minute.
Been a minute.
I think I need to refresh the audience how Bob After Dark works.
How does it work, Bob?
All right, so we split the show into two parts. First part of the show is the weird, spooky news of the week. That's where you, the fans, and me, the Bob, go scouring the internet for the weird, the unusual, the anything from advances in science that borderline on science fiction, or cryptid sightings, ghosts being caught on camera, aliens, or just all-around high strangeness. I have 3 articles for us today. Count Panic is not aware of any of them. Then we get us prepared for the hashtag panics take.
Yeah.
And you can call in too, folks, if you're listening live, or maybe you're listening in podcast land and you're going to be listening, want to call in live. Every Tuesday night starting at 9 p.m. Central, 219-845-1100.
That's as simple as that. 219-845-1100 if you're listening to this live here.
Absolutely. All right, you ready to start our stories here, Compan?
Sure, Bob. Let's get to it.
All right. So our first news article this evening comes to us from Coast to Coast AM, written by our old pal Tim Banal.
Tim Banal.
Residents of a Spanish community are understandably on edge after multiple people were menaced during by mysterious miscreants wearing scream masks. According to a local media report, the peculiar panic is currently unfolding in the village of Aguilas, A-G-U-I-L-A-S. The troublemakers at the center of the scare have been seen roaming the streets clad in black hooded robes, wearing the iconic infamous ghost face villain from the Scream horror franchise. Chillingly, it appears that the ne'er-do-wells are content with merely lingering on the sidewalks, creeping around corners, as one unfortunate resident reported a particularly chilling encounter with the delinquents. Jessica Perez recalled how her 13-year-old cousin found herself targeted by these cretins not too long ago. To the girl's profound terror, the miscreants brandished a knife and chased after her until she ran into a populated area, which caused the punks to put an end to their pursuit. Upon picking her unsettled cousin up from the scene, Perez informed the police about the troubling incident. Alas, authorities indicated that they have received several reports of the repro raids, but had yet to identify them, which less catched out of the causing trouble. Increasing the fear gripping community, eerie videos and unnerving phantoms filmed by residents who observed the mysterious strangers from a distance have spread like wildfire on the Spanish social media. While it would seem that the mask-clad individuals are just likely pranksters out looking for thrills like the clown incident, residents have found no humor in the situation. To that end, Perez called for an increased police patrols to thwart the reign of terror that hangs over the community like a dark cloud. Hashtag panic steak.
Yeah, that's very mysterious, Bob. So, again, it kind of just, it seemed like it all just happened at once there, Bob. Kind of strange, you know.
Absolutely. So yeah. I don't know, man. I could tell you right now, that is a very dangerous thing to be doing.
Well, yeah, and that's
chasing individuals with a knife. If you did that to the wrong person, you wouldn't have a chance to no.
Yeah, I mean, that happens quick, but you gotta be careful with stuff like that, you know. It just kind of, that could lead up to something very bad very quickly. Again, don't mess around with that, folks.
No, that's bad news, Bears.
Bad news.
So, Count Panic.
Yeah.
Are you ready for our second news article?
I am.
All right. So, for our
I'm wondering if you're going to get to the one I'm thinking of that was popular this weekend.
It was. I want you to know that I got that sent to me like five times.
I don't know if it's a part of it. We should address that at some point.
I'm going to bring it
that
up.
That might be a part of it. Okay.
I'm assuming we're thinking of the same
I
news
think
article,
so,
but
yeah.
We're going to save that for the last one.
Okay.
And we're going to have a conversation about it. I know. Listen. I know.
Okay. We'll talk about it.
All right. So our next story comes to... What's up?
We'll talk about it.
Okay, we'll talk about it. Our next story comes to us from Oddity Central, which is autonomous bipedal robot can now change its own batteries and work 24/7.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's not good.
No, that's terrifying. The Chinese-made Walker S2 humanoid robot is the world's first industrial robot that can change its own batteries, allowing it to operate 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Unveiled earlier this month by Chinese robotics company UB Tech Robotics, the Walker S2 has been attracting a lot of attention because of its unique ability to replace its own batteries to ensure it never runs out of power. Conventional robots need to be plugged in or have their batteries replaced, which means they have to stop working for a certain period of time. But the Walker S2 is equipped with dual battery system that allows it to replace the battery itself, one at a time, to ensure it essentially never runs out of power. This simple yet ingenious feature, I'm going to say in terrifying feature, is said to be the first among bipedal robots. In a recent video shared by UB Tech Robotics, the Walker S2 showcases its battery swapping ability. When it detects that its battery are running low on power, The robot automatically heads to the battery exchange section where it bends its arms and uses its palms to pull out one of the batteries at the back and store it at the top shelf before replacing it with a fully charged one to get the batteries back to work. The battery placement process is simple, effective, and only takes a few minutes to complete. It virtually ensures that the robots can work continuously for as long as replacement batteries are available. The system is said to have been inspired by swappable batteries of Chinese electric cars, which use modular batteries that can be swapped to save time. The Walker S2, the first humanoid robot to be equipped with self-swappable batteries, is expected to be used in industrial facilities and on its own production lines, where it completely eliminates the need for manpower. Although UB Tech Robotics has yet to reveal the technical specifications of the S2, expectations are high for the upcoming production version of the humanoid robot. Hashtag panic stake.
Yeah, Bob, I don't like this at one bit. The robots were giving them too much power here to change their own batteries. That was our job to change their batteries just in case they got crazy. Now we don't have that option anymore, Bob. Goes out the window. The robots are in control. We have lost this war.
What?
We have lost the war against the robots, Bob. They're changing their own batteries now.
That's terrifying.
It's done. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's over with now. This is the end of it now. These things, the one chance you had against an evil, you know, robot uprising is that eventually they'd run out of power.
Yeah, yeah.
And now we programmed them to change their own batteries. So you're telling me as long as there's a pack of double A's around, these things are just going to be able to get up and change them, and it's over with
it's
now.
It's over.
This is end game now.
Yeah, yeah, Bob. I don't like it. Again, we should be in control. We got to change your own batteries.
I agree. Yeah. How do you shut something down that malfunctions? Damn. If it runs forever, there's got to be a safe, not a safe space. What do you call it? A safeguard.
Yeah.
You have to have a safeguard.
Something emergency.
But if it's changing its own batteries, I don't like that. I don't like that at all.
No, bad news.
That's terrifying news. Why do we do it?
Why do we do it? Why do we give them so much power, Bob?
I don't know.
We should be the ones in control, not the robots.
Scary stuff.
I don't even want to talk bad about them now. Maybe we should start being nice.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah. All right, Count Panic, you ready for the last news story?
I think so, Bob.
And I have a feeling you know what it is.
I think I know. Go ahead.
I'm going to just give a quick shout out to our pal Doug out in New Hampshire.
Okay.
Doug from New Hampshire was the first person who told me about this while I was at the convention over the past weekend. And that is comedian Matt Rife is now the legal guardian of the haunted Annabelle doll.
Yes, this is the news. Even if you're not into the paranormal, Bob, this story was all a buzz this past week. And I'll let you explain. We'll talk about it.
So this story comes to us from the Global News out of Canada, the Canadian Post, if you will. This happened to be the one news source I found for it that I liked, but we'll just move on. It's written by Michelle Butterfield.
Okay.
So comedian Matt Rife is taking his interest in the paranormal to the next level, announcing that he's recently purchased the famed Connecticut home and museum that houses allegedly haunted Raggedy Ann doll Annabelle. Rife announced over the weekend that he and YouTuber Elton Casty have purchased the home and the museum belonging to famed paranormal investigators Ed and Lorraine Warren, and are now tasked with taking care of the home's contents, including Annabelle, the spooky attraction's crown jewel. We are the legal guardians and caretakers of all 750 haunted artifacts and items in the Warren Museum, including the Annabelle doll. I must go on record and say we do not legally own items, but we are the legal guardians and caretakers of items for at least the next 5 years, Rife 29 said in an Instagram video on Saturday, clarifying that he now owns the Warren Occult Museum, but he's not the owner of the 750 curios inside. I don't know how that works. Does that make sense to you?
That does not make sense to me.
Okay. So, Tony Spiro, who's the Warren son-in-law and co-director of the late couple's organization, the New England Society of Psychic Research, or NESPR, told Today.com that he and his wife still own the collection, including the Annabelle doll. They're only leasing them to the two.
Okay. Only leasing.
We have no plans to ever sell the artifacts, he said in the statement. If you know me, you know how I'm obsessed with all things paranormal and all things haunted, Rife's captioned photo himself and Cassidy posing with the doll. You also may know the Conjuring films are my favorite scary movies of all time, so I'm incredibly honored to have taken over one of the most prominent properties in paranormal history. Ed and Lorraine Warren arguably put demonology and paranormal into the mainstream and are now the very heart of some of the most famous and haunted stories of all time. The Conjuring House, Amityville Horror, etc. Annabelle inspired a series of films in the recent years. The opening scene of 2013's Conjuring features a doll as well as spin-off flicks like Annabelle, Annabelle Creation, and Annabelle Comes Home. The latter takes place exclusively in the Warren's residence. According to Realtor.com, the Warren Occult Museum shut down in 2019 amid a number of zoning issues. Now, Rife says he and Cassidy have plans to restore the house and welcome visitors again. So, Count, what do you think? We're not done with the story, but I need you to put in brain that they're welcoming visitors to the Warren's Museum again.
Oh, I don't know, Bob. I don't think I want to be anywhere near.
I'll finish the story. I just want you to think about it. Yeah, I wanted to put it. that thought in your brain.
The thoughts in my head.
All right, so we plan to open up the house for overnight stays and museum tours so you yourself can experience and learn the haunted history surrounding this amazing place, he wrote. The Nesper has long claimed that Annabelle's attached to an inhuman demonic spirit. Paranormal investigator Zach Baggins told U.S. Weekly that the doll is known to move on its own, leave messages on paper for its owners, and change positions. Rife's guardianship of the doll comes just weeks after Nesper investigation Dan Riviera died suddenly in his hotel room while showcasing the doll on the National Devils on the Run tour. According to E! News, a July 16th police report labeled his death as natural, but the final case of death won't be determined until an autopsy is completed. In the video, Rife acknowledged that potential risks he's taking in living under the same roof as Annabelle. This is the most random hobby ever, but it's so blanking cool, man, he said. I should probably collect stamps or something, might be a little safer. Hashtag panics take.
Yeah, Bob. This whole story is just something here. One, Matt Rife, a popular comedian.
I'll be honest with you, I never knew who he was.
He might have simmered down a little bit in the past couple years, but I know a couple years ago people were selling out his shows. He's still popular, but one, is this just having so much money you don't know really what to do with it? Two, if you had the money, would you buy, lease, be anywhere near that doll? Three, is it safe to give tours out where people could go past it, where we have this cursed history with it? You might be different from me, Bob, and I like the spooky and paranormal, but I don't want to be anywhere near the Annabelle doll. I'd rather be far away from it just because I don't want to be involved with that bad voodoo it brings. But I think this is a case of just having so much money, you just want to do silly things like purchase, lease, whatever you're doing with the Annabelle doll. I think it's a bad idea. Matt Rife, I hope nothing bad. I don't wish ill upon anybody. I just hope he's okay, safe, because that's spooky.
Now you might be wondering to yourself, Bob.
Yeah.
How do you take – what's your take on this?
What is your take on this, Bob?
The guy's got the money to do it.
He's got the money.
He's got the money. Might as well buy it out. I'd rather him own it than somebody else in the field, if you catch my drift.
Why don't they just leave the doll alone? Just
that Matt Rife guy probably started waving tons of money in the son-in-law's face to be like, let me just caretake for the doll.
A net worth of $50 million, it says here, if that's to be believed. But then that means...
The doll's worth $50
million? Oh, Matt Rife's worth $50
million. Oh, I was about to say $50 million for the Annabelle
doll. How much is Annabelle?
Well, it's not for sale. Just the concept of taking care of her is for sale, but her herself is not for sale.
Yeah. Or what it's worth at. It's valued. That's what the word I'm searching for. Valued around $2 million, the Annabelle doll. Around $2 million. You could take it home, Bob. Put it in your room.
You might be wondering yourself.
Yeah.
Does Bob want to be around the Annabelle doll?
One night, sleeping with the Annabelle doll. You got to cuddle with it.
not going to cuddle with it. Matt Rife. I'm laying down the gauntlet here.
Yeah.
I'm hoping somebody out there in the world can get this message to Matt Rife. Matt, if you're looking for your first people to stay at the Warren's Museum overnight.
You.
Me and Kyle Pan.
Me.
We'll do it.
Don't put that voodoo on me, Bear Bob. That bad juju. You want to take a phone call?
Let's take it live.
Take it live.
Call, you're on the air.
I tell you what, Bob. I just got home. I was in the car. 9 o'clock. You're playing your opening song, and I don't know. Yeah, I could get you on AM and FM on in the car. So I know the AM station wasn't working that well, if I'm not mistaken, Colin. It's coming in real quick.
Yeah, last week it was kind of wonky. Yeah.
The FM is a little staticky. Oh, but
okay.
You know what? I got. It's funny that you mentioned the robots, because I got in conversation with a elderly couple at the Munster Night Out there a little while ago, and talking about AI and robots, you know, going to be taking over just about, you know, every job out there, teaching, whatever, and then you came out with the robots changing their own batteries. So, what do you think, Bob? I mean, is this, you know, is the workforce going to be depleted by robots in the future?
I think most jobs probably will be, unfortunately. We're not at the point where these robots can change their own batteries, so even bare maintenance on these robots would probably not even be needed. The robots can do maintenance themselves.
Yeah, and, you know, that one of the displays at this fair I went to, was a robotic team from one of the junior high schools in Munster there, and, you know, pretty cool what, you know, what they, what they're already doing, you know, with robots and stuff like that. But I don't know. So is that kind of little, you know, is that a scary situation in your mind, or?
Terrifying. I don't like the idea that an artificial intelligence can become fully autonomous, meaning free will and able to do its own thing. I've seen enough movies to see how this ends, and it doesn't end pretty for the human race.
Yeah, I mean, how do you communicate? You know, how do us humans communicate with a robot? I mean. You know, how are you going to replace a teacher with a robot?
You'll find out, you know, John, when your new pickleball partner is a robot.
Geez, don't mention pickleball, Bob. That gives me a little pain right now. And then, you know what? So the count could tell you about that.
Yeah.
But hey, good show as always, and I'll continue listening. And,
thanks, John. We appreciate you calling in. You're a part of the family.
All right. Thanks, Bob. I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, John. Talk to you later.
Okay.
Yeah, robots, Annabelle, I mean, I don't know. Which one is more terrifying? It's they're both a catch-22. But
rather stay the night with Annabelle.
You think so?
Then stick me in an AI factory with, like, these robots that can change their own batteries. I would rather be with Annabelle.
Now, here's the thing with Annabelle. You're supposed to leave her in the case, right? They took her out of the case, and sadly, that tragic incident happened. And again, people say what they believe. It's a really bad timing on that. Guy left us all too soon, that investigator. I forget his name, Bob. But I wouldn't, you know, maybe it's not meant to leave the case. Why are we touching this thing, Bob? We should just let things be. We're too touchy.
I would agree.
Leave Annabelle alone. That's my moral of the story, Bob. But if Matt Rife's money, let him do what he wants to do.
Matt Rife, if you're looking for... If you're looking for the first group of people to stay tonight,
no, yeah.
We'll be there.
All right, we'll be there.
We'll be there.
We'll be there.
Matt Rife, reach out to us, 219-845-1100.
Call him now. He's listening.
Guy, listen, if somebody can make this happen, I'm into it. I'm the guy.
I think it could happen, Bob. I think it happens.
You realize if I do this, you have to do it with me.
Could I sleep outside?
Nope. Absolutely not. You're inside with me, buddy.
Locked up with Annabelle?
Yeah.
Ooh. Only bad things could happen, Bob, but we'll try it.
You'll be fine.
We'll be fine. Famous last words.
What's the worst that can happen? Those are the actual famous last words. All right, Cal, you ready for a quick break?
Sure.
All right, to our podcast fans, you're about to be hearing words from podcasts that you should be listening to, and to our live fans, stick around. We'll be right back.
Welcome to Ghostly.
Pat, what are you doing?
What? I want people to know that we're a podcast that takes a deep dive into some of the scariest ghost stories.
But we don't do the creepy voices or weird sound effects. We debate the ghost stories. And aren't you supposed to be the skeptic?
I am, but they'll find that out once they listen.
Look, all you have to do is tell them to listen to Ghostly, and that our listeners get to decide which stories are real.
And which stories are just old folklore.
Exactly.
Download Ghostly wherever you find great podcasts.
Oh, jeez. Oh.
And we're back. Oh,
yeah,
hey there, Kyle.
Hey
Panic,
there,
how
Bob.
Are you? By the way, in case anybody's hearing a squeaking.
Again? Is that happening again?
Yeah, it's because the cord is stretched. It's taut, and every time I move my head, it wiggles the cord.
We learned last time. You just got to...
Oh, yeah. Keep my head perfectly still. This is going to be a blast to edit tomorrow, let me tell you.
We'll have to figure this out. We'll call our engineer, Chuck, and he'll get us a long cord.
Chuck, please fix this.
Yeah, he'll fix it. If he can't fix it, nobody can.
All right, so I was at Gen Con, right?
Panic.
Oh, by the way, what did you do during break?
During break, Bob, you know, during break? Well, you know what I did, Bob? I went out and I changed all the robot's batteries out to
smart
double A, which they can't.
They can't run
they
on?
They can't run on, yeah.
Smart.
Yeah.
That's a smart Panic.
Everybody
right there.
Knows robots can't run on double A batteries. It's a well-known fact. How about you?
You know what I did during break, Panic?
What did you do?
I bought a new sleeping bag.
You bought it for Annabelle?
For our sleep at Annabelle's house.
Oh, that better be doll-proof. Just in case.
It moves on
moving.
Its own?
Yeah.
Oh, my word. All right.
Wouldn't you be okay, before you get to the main meat.
The meat. The lore of the week.
You hate dolls, right?
I hate dolls.
And the Annabelle is the ultimate doll.
That is like the big bad.
And you would still do this.
Yeah.
Now, what if you're at night, you're sleeping, and you notice, you just open your eyes, and you notice it's just standing over you. What do you do in that case?
Scream for Ben?
Nobody could hear you scream.
Nobody could hear me scream. What a terrifying thought campaign.
Yeah, I know. Think about it.
All right. So, anywho, you ready for the lore of the week?
Sure.
All right. So, lore of the week. It's at Gen Con. It's a board gaming convention, tabletop RPG, et cetera, biggest of its kind, 85,000 people. But there's not a lot of things I could do with that to make a paranormal story out of it.
Okay.
So instead, why don't we talk about the history of the world's most spooky board game, the Ouija board?
Oh, Bob, fantastic.
Yep. So this week on Bob After Dark, we're talking about the history of the Ouija board.
I can't believe we never talked about the history.
No, we've touched base on it, but nothing... In all of our history.
Wow.
All right. So we're going to start with a quote from Brown University.
Okay.
The exact origin of the Ouija board is unknown. Objects similar to the Ouija board date back to 1551 BC to ancient China, where spirit boards were used as commonplace items to communicate with the dead. It is claimed that the Pythagoras used talking boards to enhance his studies and unearth revelations from the unseen world. Talking boards have connections to ancient Rome, where two people used the Ouija board to predict the successor of the king. They were tried for treason and eventually hung, and claimed the successor was immediately executed.
Yeah, that's not good.
All right. So the first place to start, other than just like the bare minimum beginnings, is let's talk about spiritualism.
Okay.
The religion, the movement, the belief. So that is where, if you look at the Ouija board, that is exactly where the first place we should be looking is looking at what the spiritualism movement is. So according to the Encyclopedia Britannica, which I can't believe I'm quoting that in 2025, spiritualists believed to develop during early decades of the movement. A core belief of spiritualism that individuals survive deaths of their bodies and ascending into a spirit existence. A person's condition after death is directly related to the moral quality of human existence. Communion with the spiritual world is both possible and desirable, and spiritual healing is the natural result of such communication. The spiritualists understand that God has an infinite intelligence. Historically, spiritualism was organized in small groups that conducted seances or meetings for spiritual communication. Large gatherings were held for public demonstrations of spirit contact and psychic phenomena. These gatherings evolved into the Sunday church services and became common in spiritualist churches in the 20th century. Many associations also sponsored camps where believers could congregate in leisurely atmosphere, have private sessions with mediums, and attend daily seances, which I've actually done, by the way. Okay. I was at the Casadega Spiritualist Camp in Florida outside Orlando.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, the biggest one in the country, yeah. I believe. Initially, spiritualist gatherings were concerned with demonstrating and investigating mental phenomena such as clairvoyance, telepathy, and the reception of images and messages from spirits. The messages that mediums claimed to receive were examined in order to build theoretical constructs for explaining how spirits contact could occur. Very early in the movement, however, seances featuring more spectacular physical phenomena were conducted, and mediums arose who specialized in such displays. Spirits were said to have the power to levitate objects, speak independently of the medium, leave pictures on photographic plates, and materialize objects, including themselves. Also basic to spiritualist practice is spirit healing. Among the precursors of spiritualism was the Magnetist movement, which had grown out of the magnetic healing theories of Franz Anton Mesmer. The Magnetists had specialized in spiritual healing and public demonstration of magnetic phenomena, which included hypnotism. Spiritualism absorbed many of the assumptions of the Magnetist movement, but maintained that healings were the result of spiritual influence rather than magnetic power. Although some spiritualist practices have been motivated by mere curiosity and fascination with the supernatural, they have also been driven by more serious concerns about the fate of the human soul. For those who had lost their faith in traditional Christianity, spiritualists have often offered a new religion based on not an ancient tradition, but on facts apparently that it could be observed by anybody. Those for whom a materialistic ways of thinking have precluded belief in life after death have been given a new hope of immortality. Those suffering from grief after death of loved ones have been offered possibility of communicating with them. The strong involvement of the emotion in both acceptance and rejection of spiritualism has made it difficult to appraise impartially the evidence against it. So, and then according to what the word medium is, according to the Encyclopedia Britannica, a medium in occultism is a person reportedly able to make contact with the world of the spirits, especially in a state of trance. A spiritualist medium is a central figure during a seance and sometimes requires the assistance of an invisible go-between or control. During a seance, disembodied voices are said to speak either directly through the medium, materialization of a disembodied spirit, or a specific part of the human body can allegedly take shape from a mysterious vicious substance called ectoplasm that excludes from the medium's body and subsequently disappears by returning to the original source. At the times, the medium or material object appears to float in air, levitation. So, that's a little bit about the spiritualism movement. Very basic. I could do a 4-part series on spiritualism.
Yeah.
Probably barely scratch the surface, but people still practice it to this day.
To this very day, Bob, it's going on even outside the Magic Kingdom.
Yeah, really. Now, about an hour outside of the Magic Kingdom is Casadega, and then Second Salem in Wisconsin is still a thing as well. The Witch's Tower, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
What does that have to do with the Ouija board?
Everybody's asking the same question.
All right, so according to the Smithsonian, the Ouija board can't connect us to paranormal forces, but it can tell us a lot about psychology, grief, and uncertainty. The game was born from Americans' obsession with the spiritualism movement in the 19th century. Since then, it's functioned as a reflection of the deep-seated beliefs and anxieties for more than a century. Excuse me. In the late 1800s, advertisements for a new paranormal product started appearing in papers. Ouija, or the Wonderful Talking Board, boomed a Pittsburgh toy and novelty shop describing a magical device that answered questions concerning the past, present, and future with marvelous accuracy, and provided a link which unties the known with the unknown and the material with the immaterial. Another advertisement in New York newspaper declared it as an interesting and mysterious, and testified that it had been proven at the patent office before the patent was allowed. Price? Can you guess what the first price of the Ouija board was?
What's the first price of the Ouija
board? $1.50.
Not bad. But that was what year?
The late 1800s.
Oh, yeah. So back then, it was probably, wow, this is a fancy board.
That's a fancy board, yeah, with some letters on it right there.
$1.50.
This mysterious talking board was basically what's sold in stores today. A flat wooden board with the letters of the alphabet arranged in two semicircles above the numbers 0 through 9. The words yes and no appear in the utmost corners, while goodbye is printed out at the bottom. The board also comes with a planchet, a teardrop-shaped device usually with a small window in the body used to maneuver about the board. The idea that two or more people would sit around the board, place their fingertips on the planchet, pose a question, and watch dumbfounded as the planchet moves from one letter to the other, spelling out the answers seemingly of its own accord. Today, the Ouija board game's design is similar, though the boards can also come in other materials other than wood, like plastic. Are Ouija boards real? Yes, of course they're real. We just talked about it. I'm just
real.
Being silly. What does Ouija mean? Though the truth in advertising is hard to come by, especially in products from the 19th century, the mystical device was an interesting and mysterious, and it actually had been proven to work at the patent office before the patent was even allowed to proceed. And today, even psychologists believe that may offer a link between the known and the unknown. Gosh, I hate this cord. It's like right in my ear.
The Ouija board cord.
The Ouija cord.
Ouija cord. Taunted cord.
The Ouija board's history is about as mysterious as how the game works. Ouija historian Robert Murch had been researching the story of the board since 1992 when he first purchased a copy. At the time, he said no one really knew anything about its origins, which struck him odd. For such an iconic thing that strikes both fear and wonder in American culture, how come no one knew where it came from? The Ouija board, in fact, came straight out of the American 19th century with the spiritualism movement, the belief that the dead are able to communicate with the living. The beginning of the modern spiritualism in America often linked in the incident in upstate New York in 1848. Two sisters, Kate and Maggie Fox, claim that they have received messages from the spirits who rapped on walls and answer questions, later recreating this feat channeling in parlors across the state. Abided by the stories of the celebrity sisters and other spiritualists, the movement reached millions of adherents in the years followed. Spiritualism worked for Americans. Many believed it was compatible with the Christian dogma, meaning one could hold a seance on a Saturday night and have no qualms about going to church on the next day. It was an acceptable, even wholesome activity to contact spirits in seances through automatic writings or table-turning parties in which participants would place their hands on a table and listen as someone called out the spirit, called out the letters of the alphabet. When certain letters were spoken, they would watch the table begin to shake and rattle, declaring all the while that all the while they weren't moving it. Spiritualism offered solace in an era when lifespans were much shorter than they were today. Even Mary Todd Lincoln, wife of President Abraham Lincoln, conducted seances in the White House after her 11-year-old son died of fever in 1862. During the Civil War, spiritualism attracted droves by adherents who were desperate to connect with loved ones who had gone away to war and never came back home. Communicating with the dead was common. It wasn't even seen as bizarre or weird, says Murch. it's hard to imagine that now what we think, what we look at and think that, why are you opening up the gates of hell? So who invented the Ouija board, Kenneth?
I asked that question as well.
When a few men in Baltimore started the Kennard Novelty Company, the first producers of the Ouija board in the late 19th century, opening the gates of hell was the last thing on their minds. Instead, they were mostly interested in opening up Americans' wallets.
Oh, okay.
As spiritualism had grown in American culture, so did the frustration with how long it took to get anything meaningful, a message out of the spirit, says Brandon Hoge, a historian of spiritualism. Calling out the alphabet and waiting for the knock at the right letter, for example, was deeply boring. After all, rapid communication with breathing humans as far as distances was possible. The telegraph had been around for decades. So why shouldn't spirits be easy to reach? People were desperate for methods of communication that would be quicker, and while several entrepreneurs realized that, it was the Kennard Novelty Company that really nailed it.
This is on the map.
Yes. In 1886, newspapers reported on the new phenomenon taking over spiritualist camps in Ohio. It was, for all intents and purposes, a Ouija board with letters, numbers, and a planchet-like device to point at them. The article was read far and wide, but it was Charles Kennard who saw it as a business opportunity. In 1890, he pulled together a group of four other investors, including Elijah Bond, a local attorney, and Washington Bowie, a surveyor, to start the Kennard Novelty Company, which would exclusively make and market these new talking boards. But first, Kennard's talking board needed a name. Contrary to popular belief, the word Ouija is not a combination of the French word for yes, oui, or the German equivalent ja,
oi,
or ja.
Ja.
I knew the ja. Oi.
Ja. Oi.
Oui.
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 Oui. Oui.
Is that how O-U-I, is that we?
Yeah, we.
I gotcha. I thought I always pronounced it as we. Never mind, that makes sense. So yeah. I know the Germans, yeah.
Yeah.
J-A.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, yeah. According to Merge, it was the Bond sister-in-law, Helen Peters, who was a Bond, such a strong medium, who supplied the now reasonable handle. When she asked the board what they should call it, the name Ouija came through. The board also told her that the word meant good luck. Eerie and cryptic, but for the fact that the Peters acknowledged that she was wearing a locket bearing the picture of a woman named Ouija written beside it. That's the story that emerged from the Ouija founder's letters, and it's very possible that the woman in the locket was the famous Ouida. Ouida?
Ouida.
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 O-U-I-D-A.
Sure.
Ouida?
Who am I to correct that?
Whom Peters admired, and that Ouija was just a misreading of the name. According to Merch's interviews and descendants of the Ouija founders and the original Ouija patent file itself, which he's seen, the story of the board's patent request was true. The men knew that they wouldn't get their patent if they couldn't prove that the board worked. So Bond bought the indispensable Peters to the patent office in Washington, D.C. when he filed for his application. There, the chief patent officer demanded a demonstration if the board could actually spell out his name, which was supposed to be unknown to Bond and Peters. He'd allow the patent application to proceed. They all communed with the spirits, and the planchet faithfully spelled out the patent officer's name. Whether it's mystical spirits or the fact that Bond, the patent attorney, may have simply just known the man's name is unclear, Merch says. But on February 10th, 1891, a white-faced and visibly shaken official awarded Bond a patent for his new toy or game. The operation is as follows. The table is placed upon the board. The hand of the operator lightly... reads weird. Give me a second.
Sure. It's French.
The operation is as follows. The table is placed upon the board and the hand of the operator is lightly laid or held on the table. Within a few moments, the table will move and point to certain letters on the board, spelling out and forming sentences, answering questions put by the operator or any person that may be present at the time. The first patent describes the device, but offers no explanation to how it works. The ambiguity. You know the word.
Yeah, ambiguity.
Yeah. A-M-B-I-G-U-I-T-Y. Ambiguity. Yeah, yeah, ambiguity.
Ambiguity.
You were close there. Oh, man.
It's tough for us.
It's something. But yeah, you know the word.
Ambiguity.
Ambiguity.
Yeah.
was part or more Scotch's marketing. It's late. Ambiguity. Yeah. Ambiguity.
Yeah.
Oh, my word.
Ambiguity. Now, can you spell that?
I just did. A-M-B-I-G-U-I-T-Y.
Okay.
These were very shrewd businessmen, says Merge. And the less Kennard company said about how the board worked, the more mysterious it seemed, and the more people wanted to buy it. Ultimately, it was a moneymaker. They didn't care why people thought it worked. And it was a moneymaker. Hmm. By 1892, the Kennard Novelty Company went from one factory in Baltimore to two in Baltimore, two in New York, two in Chicago, one in London. Soon after, Kennard and Bond were out owing... owing to some internal pressures and the old adage about money changing everything. By this time, William Fuld, who had gotten in on the ground floor of the fledging business as an employee and stockholder, was running the company. Notably, Fuld was never claimed to be the inventor of the board, though even in his obituary, in the New York Times declared him to be. Also notably, Fuld died in 1927. After a freak fall from a roof of his new factory.
That's not a good thing. Bobby, I'm going to pause it right there. You want to take a phone call?
We got a caller. Take it live.
Take it live.
Caller, you're on the air.
Well, good evening, gentlemen.
Hey, Bill, how are you?
I'm doing fine. I'm enjoying the show. I'm glad to talk to my two favorite radio personalities.
How about that? Where are they at?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm finally hearing you. I guess last week you station was off the air for a while.
Yeah. Well, you know,
yeah, technical difficulties.
It kind of worked in our favor. I know Bob was at traveling for cons, but yeah, the station had a little. It feels what I think they unplugged it last week, but it's plugged back in this week, so we're happy to be back. But yeah, we're here live.
Well, you were talking about the robots. Maybe you put the right batteries where they were supposed to be. I don't know.
Maybe robots should take over the tower, station tower.
Goodness.
Yeah. Let's think about
Bob, you were talking about, you know, dolls and that. And I know my cousin in her room back at the time, and she had about 10, 15 in there and on a shelf and that. And she showed me that, and I just didn't stay in that room too long.
Bill, you had the right idea.
I mean, you know, dolls are dolls. The girl wants dolls. I understand that. But no, that she showed me, and she said, yeah, I sleep in here with all these dolls. I said, well, God bless you. I don't know. So
Yeah, they're eerie. I know Bob has a big fear of them, but that Annabelle one is just don't mess with that one.
Yeah. I don't think I'd want to tangle with that one.
Leave it alone.
No, leave it alone. Okay, listen, like I say, I'm enjoying your show, and you guys have a good rest of the evening then.
You too, Bill.
Well, thanks, Bill. Appreciate
you. Take care, you too, as well.
Yeah, well, no dolls. That's it.
No dolls.
No dolls, Bill says.
No dolls. Leave him at home.
Okay. Take care.
Take care, Bill. Bill,
by the way, him falling off that building, the way. It was said that the factory was building Ouija boards that he fell off the building.
Now, this
from.
Should just be this is a bad omen to come here, Bob.
Something like that. What followed were boom years for Fuld and the frustration of some men who had been on the Ouija board from the beginning. Public squabbling over who'd really invented it and played out in the pages of the Baltimore Sun while their rival boards were launched. How did the Ouija board become so popular? You might ask yourself.
Yeah, that too.
The board's instant and now, more than 130 years later, prolonged success showed that it tapped into a weird place in American culture. It was marketed as both a mystical oracle and as family entertainment, fun with an element of otherworldly excitement. This meant that it wasn't only spiritualists who brought the board. In fact, it was people who disliked the Ouija board who was most tendered by the spirit mediums, as it promised access to the spiritual world without a middleman. So the Ouija board was making the psychics upset, because who needs a psychic now when you got a spiritual board?
Yeah.
The Ouija board appealed to people from across a wide spectrum of ages, professions, and educational backgrounds. People want to believe. The need to believe is something else is out there is powerful, says Merch. The thing is one of those things that allows they express that belief. It's logical, then, that the board would find its greatest popularity in uncertain times when people are holding to the belief of searching for answers. The 1910s and 20s, which with the devastations of World War I and the frantic years of the jazz age of Prohibition, witnessed a surge in Ouija's popularity. In 1920, Norman Rockwell, illustrator of the blissful 20th century domesticated, painted a man and a woman, a Ouija board between them, communicating with the beyond, the cover of the Saturday Evening Post. Over 5 months in 1944, as World War II raged, a single New York department store sold over 50,000 boards.
Holy smokes.
In 1967, the year after Parker Brothers bought the game, 2 million boards were sold, outperforming Monopoly. That same year saw more American troops dying in Vietnam, the Summer of Love in San Francisco, and the race riots in cities across the country. So it seemed like the more there was going on negatively, the more these Ouija boards sold better.
Yeah, that was how it goes.
Interesting stuff.
Yeah, it is interesting. It's very basic math, I guess, goes as far as Ouija board sales.
All right. So, strange Ouija tales made more frequent to more appearances in American newspapers. In 1920, National Wire Services reported that would-be crime solvers were turning to their Ouija boards for clues of the mysterious murder in a New York City gambler, Joseph Bone Elwell, much to the frustration of the police. In 1921, the New York Times reported that a Chicago woman was sent to a psychiatric hospital after developing hallucinations. Thank you. Hallucinations induced by a Ouija board. She described the situation as it is this. We started getting sermons from beyond. We have hundreds of these sermons that we typewrote and preserved. They are hidden away from prying eyes. These sermons grew more and more beautiful. All of them came from the Ouija board. I, myself, was doubtful, but after the Ouija board had been talking to us for days, we just had to believe. Similar incidents made occasional appearances in the news for years. In 1930, a woman in Buffalo participated in a murder, supposedly on the encouragement of Ouija board messages. In 1941, a 23-year-old gas station attendant from New Jersey told the Times that he joined the Army due to some spiritual advice. When officials at the recruitment office asked what gave him the idea of becoming a soldier, he answered, "I want to learn a trade in the Army school, and my Ouija board told me that the Army was the place to do it." Huh. So I guess that they saved money on a recruiter
that day.
So. In 1956, Connecticut judge heard the case of Helen Dow Peck, who left only $1,000 each to two former servants and a whopping $178,000 to John Gable Forbes, a lucky but bodiless spirit who had contacted her via the Ouija board. Ouija boards even offered literary inspiration. In the 1910s, Pearl Curran made headlines when she began writing poems and stories that claimed that were dedicated via the Ouija board. By the spirit of a 17th century English woman called Patience Worth. Not long after, Curran's friend Emily Grant Hutchings claimed that the book, Jap Heron, was communicated via Ouija board and by the late Samuel Clemens, better known as Mark Twain.
Wow.
Curran enjoyed significant popularity while Hutchings was less successful. But decades later, Pulitzer Prize-winning poet James Merrill surpassed both women. In 1983, his Ouija-inspired epic poem, The Changing Light at Sandover, won the National Book Critics Circle Award. Merrill, for his part, publicly implied that the Ouija board acted more as a magnifier for his own poetic thoughts rather than just a hotline to spirits. In 1979, he wrote Mirabelle, Books of Numbers, another Ouija creation, and he told the New York Review of Books, "If these spirits aren't external, how astonishing mediums have become. How did Americans come to fear the Ouija board, you might be asking?
How did they?
Well, you see, the Ouija board existed on the periphery of American culture and popular, mysterious, interesting, and usually bearing the few cases of the supposed Ouija-inspired murders non-threatening, that is, until 1973. That year, The Exorcist, which was supposedly based on a true story, scared the pants off of people in theaters. The implication that 12-year-old Reagan was possessed by a demon with after playing with an Ouija board by herself changed how people saw the board. It's kind of like Psycho, how people were afraid to take showers after that scene.
Yeah.
It's a clear line, says Merge, adding that before the Exorcist film and TV depictions of spiritualism were usually silly. I Love Lucy, for example, featured a 1951 episode in which Lucy and Ethel hosted a seance. But for at least 10 years afterwards, it's no joke, Merch says. The Exorcist actually changed the fabric of pop culture. Almost overnight, Ouija became the tool of the devil and, for some reason, a tool of horror writers and movie makers. It began popping up in scary movies, usually opening the door to evil spirits hell-bent on ripping apart co-eds. In the years that followed, the Ouija board was also denounced by religious groups as Satan's preferred method of communication. In 2001, in Alamogordo, New Mexico, it was burned on bonfires along with copies of Harry Potter and Disney's Snow White. Even in recent years, Christian religious groups remain wary of the board, citing scripture denouncing communications with spirits through mediums. Catholic.com calls the Ouija board far from harmless. In 2011, 700 Club host Pat Robertson declared that the demons can reach out to us through this board. Even within the paranormal community, Ouija boards have a dodgy reputation. Merch says that he first began speaking at paranormal conventions and he was told to leave his antique boards at home because it scared people too much. Parker Brothers, and later Hasbro after acquiring Parker Brothers in 91, still sold thousands of them, but the reasons people bought them had changed significantly. Ouija boards were spooky rather than spiritual, with a distinct fear of danger. So what do you think, Cal Panic?
Is that the wrap on it, Bob?
Well, yeah, there's more.
Okay. Oh, there's more. Okay, I didn't
want to pop. No. That's we were talking about how it got feared and all of that jazz.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, Bob, about the Ouija board. It's interesting history. I didn't know all that. I'm sure we all learned from this episode. But the Ouija board itself, much like the Annabelle doll, yeah, I don't really like dabbling with it. Now, I know you've had some Ouija board experiences. I've been in the same building in the next room over while you were in a room with a Ouija board just because
that's
you
know, not your thing.
I didn't want to see what could come. And you did have some activity at night, I know. But this was a toy, a board game, a board. That was sold at, Walmart's, Toys R Us, Target. And here we're selling these things that people are opening other dimensions with. Now, Monopoly, for my knowledge, does not do that. Sorry, Checkers, all that other jazz, Chutes and Ladders, Candyland, they don't open up portals. But the Ouija board does. And I was always surprised they would sell it in big box stores.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, Comp Panic.
Yeah.
Not your thing, but totally a thing for many people across the entire world.
Yeah, people love it.
On my own, in the house, I have several I've collected over the years.
You got a room of Ouija boards.
What's that?
You got a room of Ouija boards.
I have quite a bit of them, yes. Gwen Knight's been collecting them long before me. Planchets, Ouija boards, the whole nine. It's an aesthetic now than it is.
Yeah.
I would argue that the Ouija board now isn't as prevalent in like a spiritualism movement as it is more of I don't want to say an aesthetic either. Some people use them as tools in paranormal investigations. I've used them before in, seances in the past and et cetera, to both interesting results that I can't explain to things I could explain. I think it's just an interesting piece of pop culture that's stuck around with us for a very long time, and I think it'll be around for a very long time in the future.
I think you're right about that, Bob. I still don't know why they sell them at Target and Toys R Us, but
Hasbro.
Hasbro. I mean, what has been has anything really kind of shook you when using a Ouija board? Has there been a time like, you know what, maybe I should just leave this be here?
The time, it's not an appropriate story, but I can tell you that the planchet, like, threw itself off the board.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's not a good thing, right?
It was terrifying.
What? And how do you end it then? Okay.
We got it back up on the board and said goodbye because the thing said something really derogatory to the person using it. I'm not going to go into that on the show. It's family friendly.
Now, is it true you got to burn them to destroy the
nonsense?
Don't burn your Ouija boards.
Just give them to me.
But do you see how this goes? People open up portals, and then they got to call a priest.
It's a piece of wood.
How do you explain the thing flying off the handle?
I think it's the implication of how you use it. If you're just collecting them for the aesthetic of collecting them, or you're into the paranormal,
decorate with them or something.
Decorate with them, or if you're actually going to be using them as a legitimate source of spiritual communication, you should probably know what you're doing before you just screw around with one.
Portals.
But, you know, anybody else just picking one up and doing their thing with it, that could be a little on the dangerous side.
Did you always think it was weird they used to sell it in stores?
No, like, not at all. No? I mean,
Hasbro?
No different than going to the store and buying anything else in that regard, right?
Well,
I mean, these days I could go into Second and Charles and buy a tarot deck and crystals, you know?
Yes, you could do that, yeah.
Or a bookstore sells books on, you know, magic with a K. And I'm talking like normal big retailers dealing that sort of thing. So it's no different than that,
I would say. 8 and up. Ouija board.
What is that what it says on the box?
I don't know. Usually games
I'm going to look it up.
Ages. Fun Ouija for the whole family.
I never thought you. They'll usually put a Ouija board box. What does the box say? Now that I think about it. I could buy one from Walmart right now for
$20.
$20. Oh, what is it? Oh, come on. I can't see the board. Oh, the box. It's right there. It shows 8+.
8+. There you go. There you have it.
I never knew that until now. It's ages 8 and plus.
8+.
So if you're 7, no seances for you. But the second you turn 8, you're allowed to be upon a seance.
Yeah, that's the ages right there.
Absolutely. Count Panic, I just want to say thank you for letting us come back on this week. It's been a good time.
Yeah, it has been.
And we now know a little bit more about the Ouija board that we didn't know prior.
Yeah. No, we learned a lot.
Absolutely. Do you have any closing words for our audience this week?
Well, Bob, let's see. Let me think of a good closing argument here. Yes, everybody, maybe I recommend buying Candyland or Guess Who or something simple for the family that the kids want to enjoy. Maybe hold off to the Ouija board until they're like 12. That's my words of advice. But everybody else, continue to have a great summer.
Absolutely. Folks, thank you so much for listening and watching to another episode of Bob After Dark. I have to call the winner of this contest.
Oh!
I have the name pulled up right here from a random generator, and I had it pulled up in a different link.
I'm glad you remembered, Bob. I was about to sign off. People were going to get mad.
People are going to get mad. The winner of the contest. The winner of the contest is one Desmond Maloney.
Whoa!
I believe Desmond's our friend from Michigan, so congratulations, Desmond, on winning the Bob After Dark swag.
Random generator.
Random name generator based on everybody who entered the contest.
That's
so
fair.
Congratulations,
congrats
Des.
To Desmond.
Yeah, congratulations, Desmond.
Lots
I'm going to get that out to the mail to you tomorrow.
Wow. We got to do this more. We got to do more random generator giveaways. What can we give away next time?
A date with Count Panic.
Hey, how about that?
I don't tempt me.
What was that app you were working on?
Oh, the paranormal dating app?
Yeah. That's gone?
I never got off the ground.
Well,
I needed the right investors.
Something to look into.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. So, anywho, folks, thanks for watching and listening to the episode of Bob After Dark. On behalf of me and Count Panic, we just want to wish all of you sweet dreams. To my mom, I just want to say good night to you and sweet dreams. And to Dad, no matter where you are in the universe, I hope you're happy, comfortable doing whatever it is that you want to be doing. And to Tiff, I hope you have the sweetest dreams of them all. Good night, everybody. Remember, the two most important rules of Bob After Dark are not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Until next time.
Memoriam Development.